Talk given Sunday, 22nd February 1976. Let us consider together some of the implications of the transformation of our mode of awareness of existence, which takes place through living the religious life. In culmination, the worldly mode of consciousness is completely changed into the transcendent mode. This does not mean that it is another mode from the worldly mode. We must understand this very carefully, because the religious life is life in the world in terms of true humanness, of human perfection, if we may so call it. And what has happened is that all that characterizes the worldly mode, our ambitions and fears and anxieties, our perplexities, our ignorance and all that, has disappeared with this transformation of the worldly mode, which has these characteristics, into the transcendent mode. But we are conscious of the world, the same world of which we were conscious in the worldly mode before the realization of human fruition and fulfillment. As the outer world would put it, the man of the world is transformed into a being who is free of illusions and delusions, whose life is a saintly life. One doesn't, therefore, practice saintship as if it were a technique, a particular mode of living. The saintly life becomes the life of that man quite naturally and spontaneously. He cannot help living that way. When I look at him, I say, oh, that man is a saintly man. And by contrast, the average man of the world is a worldly man. But for the saint himself, there is no sense of contrast in his mind with regard to himself. In fact, with regard to himself, one may almost say that he is quite unself-conscious. This is one of the great changes that takes place. Now, there is an outstanding characteristic which differentiates ourselves in the worldly mode from ourselves in the fully human mode, which we can quite legitimately call the transcendent mode. And that is in the manner in which we attend to everything, to every person, every event, every situation. First and foremost, we are no longer aware in terms of separation from any person, anything, any situation. We are fully awake to the fact that the situation completely contains us. Our self-containment, which in our worldly state separates us from the world, is now a self-containment in which the word self has grown in meaning in such a way as to include the totality. But if it includes the totality, the sense of the separate I has completely vanished. It is no longer a case of I and you or him or the situation or the country or the object you're looking at, etc. The separatist I consciousness has completely vanished. One is aware in terms of the whole. And one attends to the whole completely and totally. Now, first and foremost, this implies the utter transcending of birth-death, the birth-death process in our mind and consciousness. Doesn't mean that oneself, the living person, will not physically die. Of course one will. But the manner in which we are ordinarily conscious of the birth-death process is completely transcended. Now, we all know from our ordinary everyday experience that for us, every thought or mood or action or experience begins, it proceeds, and it comes to an end. We associate our self-consciousness, the I am I consciousness, which is actually a misconception. We associate this misconception of I am I with beginning, proceeding, and ending of our every thought or mood, etc. And so we experience life in terms of time. The time consciousness undergoes a complete transformation when attention is total and complete. In ordinary time consciousness, there is always a lag in our awareness of what is happening. The thing arises, it happens, and afterwards we become aware that it has happened. And we are always catching up with its proceeding as we commonly say, time passes by. Now, in this process, we undergo all kinds of reactions to the process, because the process is constantly sending out impulses, stimuli to us. When we receive the stimuli, whether they be in terms of sight or hearing or touch or whatever it is, the brain reacts back at those stimuli. And this is basically due to our being aware in this mode of time, the movement of time, which is the state of mortality, beginning, proceeding, dying, birth, death, constant succession of births and deaths in our own mind and consciousness. This is the real meaning of the Sanskrit word samsara. It has been, I would definitely say, mistranslated as a series of lives. It is not a series of lives. It is a series of awareness of that which is in terms of mortality, in terms of beginning, ending, birth, death. Birth as a specific, separate, unchanging identity, entity, and each stage as something separate. In fact, we are atomistically conscious only, and not conscious in terms of the whole field simultaneously. But when one is totally attentive, there is no time lag in the awareness of what happens. There is absolutely no time lag. Now, if you look carefully at the time process, birth here, then movement, growth, and then death, there is a great distance. But in actuality, and this is true of the entire universal process physically, there is a vibrating at such an extraordinary speed that consciousness cannot differentiate between the beginning and the ending, as we call it. We just use the words beginning, ending. Now, when you cannot differentiate like that, you are quite unconscious of the actual happening. But when the mind is sufficiently purified so that there are no reactions to the time process, then this beginning, ending is seen as a vibrating of life in eternity. Then you are aware, actually aware, in terms of eternity. And in terms of eternity, you no longer feel the life process as a beginning or birth and an ending or death. You are so responsive to the change, the continuous changing process, that you are actually in tune with the transformation from moment to moment, a transmutation from moment to moment. The life of the universe is creative energy in action in eternity, not in time. Because I am unawake, incapable of responding to this, I mistranslate it as a beginning, proceeding, and dying in unidirectional time. Now, this is simply due to the fact that I am unable to give total, complete attention to the life process as it goes on. You get it? This is the difference between mortality and immortality. All the commoner garden meanings of immortality are sheer nonsense. When your mode of awareness has undergone this transformation, so that you are attentive completely and totally to the totality now, in the instant, then you are at one with that transformation process, and you don't separate out anymore in terms of the time process, the time movement. We impose the concept of time and awareness in terms of time upon the actual fact of eternity here now. It's a creative action in eternity. And this creative action in eternity has neither birth in it nor death in it. The absolute all is undergoing continuous transformation. See? If the absolute all is undergoing continuous transformation, there is nothing which is annihilated, nothing which is destroyed, nothing which is made and brought into being as something new. The totality is there always as the totality. And being there always in totality, it is not fragmented. The fragmentation takes place because of my mode of awareness, my mode of consciousness. I am unawake to the totality. I am unable to be conscious in terms of totality, to attend totally and completely. As long as I separate self, as long as I separate one thing from another, as long as, to put it in other terms, I am unawake, unaware of the complete interrelationship between the multitudinous so-called separate things which make up the totality, I'm unaware to their relationships and their interactions. I am aware in terms of fragments, broken bits. I have broken up the totality in my consciousness. I can't avoid it, I can't help it. At the start, this is how we begin, so to say. We begin with time, and we do not get rid of time. Time becomes transformed for us in our awareness into eternity. Now just consider carefully. Ordinarily, one reacts constantly to the whole life process. One likes what is happening, one dislikes what is happening. One feels secure and pleased and so forth. One feels insecure, anxious, fear. One is in fear and so forth. All those reactions completely vanish if you're totally attentive in the immediate creative now. Because when you are totally conscious like that, there is no sense of a separate otherness in relation to anything and everything. Then there is no fear. You know, this has been put very, very tersely in one of the great Upanishads. But I doubt if anyone has succeeded in expounding it lucidly in intellectual terms. This sense of otherness is due to the fact that one is unable to give total and complete attention to what is called the other. The phenomenon, all the sense phenomena, sights, sounds, tastes, touches, and so forth, all these sense phenomena tend to produce an analytical split-up awareness of what's going on. To give you a simple example of this in our own daily lives, if the body is well, healthy, nothing's wrong with it, your sort of background self-consciousness of the body is a whole consciousness. The body is a whole. This is me, the me, so to say. And its continuing life process is the me. You don't feel about it or think about it in terms of parts. But if you get a headache or something like that, then the sense of separateness, something other, has come into the situation. Now, this is what happens with the mind and in consciousness. The body comes to maturity, the body can be healthy, we all experience that. But the mind almost never comes to maturity in the members of the human race. It is always in this fragmented condition, this split-up condition. You see? And therefore, there are all these reactions, all these fears, all these strange intellectual explanations, and so forth and so forth. And you pick and choose the one which pleases you, satisfies you for the time being, and say, I believe this. When you can attend totally, there are no beliefs, there are no fixed convictions, no mental fixations of any sort in the mind. The mind is utterly transparent, utterly, to use the word they use so much in India particularly, the mind is empty. What is it empty of? It's empty of all the obstructions to total awareness, expressed through total attentiveness. So, if one can be totally attentive like that, one is aware, one is actually living in terms of immortality. There is no longer beginning and ending. You are with the universal process from split second to split second. This doesn't mean that you are unconscious of differentiation. Differentiation there is. There are innumerable particulars, limited, finite things, persons, events, and so on. But because we are unawake to they are complete interrelationships. We think of them, we are conscious of them as so many separate things. And when we can't relate the separate things together in the right way, our sense of wholeness, of holiness, has disappeared. It is this release of the sense of wholeness, of holiness, of completeness, of totality, which is the whole task of religious living. And this religious living, therefore, can be carried out only in the world, not away from the world. Because this is our sphere of action, it is our school. The world itself, from day to day, is our school in which we learn, if we have been helped to understand something of the art of learning. This is where attentiveness and mindfulness play the most important part. You are really mindful of what is happening all the time. Particularly, be mindful of all the reactions which take place in our ordinary worldly mode of awareness, the mode in terms of time, which of course is also in terms of sorrow, of anxiety, of ignorance, of perplexity, of fear, and all these things, of duality, of multiplicity. See, be aware of the reactions which spring up in the brain and observe them very quietly, coolly with the intellect and very intimately, totally accepting these reactions warmly with the heart. Because if we reject them and say, oh no, this is not the right thing, this doesn't lead me to fruition and fulfillment, well, the cure cannot be effected. One has to see both ways, that the reactions as they take place inside oneself, at a distance, holding them for examination like a scientist observes them, you have also to take them right inside yourself with your eyes closed and feel them as the artist feels, the creative artist feels. Now, how does the creative artist feel? When any person takes something right into his own psyche and feels it intensely as part and parcel of himself, a transformation process takes place there. The impure is transformed into the pure. That which is ill understood, which ties up the intellect in knots, becomes disentangled and everything straightens out. This is the way insights come. This is the way of the creative artist. The two are combined together. Both are necessary. One alone will not do. Supposing, take in ordinary life, a creative artist, a man with genius, he gets an inspiration. But if he hasn't got the cool intellectual grasp of it and the technique of working out that inspiration, he will produce no music, no poetry, no painting, nothing at all. You have to have both aspects there. The critical externalized observation, which is analytical, critical, sees the relationship of parts, and this something from within which is feeling, which is non-analytical, but not mechanically synthesizing, it integrates that which the intellect sees at a distance. And lo and behold, a thing of beauty comes into being. And it is this kind of process which goes on inside us when we live the religious life in the right way. So in observing the reactions, you discover your own inner nature. This is what I am. When we discover our own inner nature, from moment to moment, we must not let that discovery be a fixation. One is caught up in a mood of fear or depression or anger, whatever it is. All right. But don't say that I am angry. I'm a person who is characterized by anger forever and ever. No. Because the mood changes, doesn't it? Your state, your mode of reaction changes, it undergoes change. From feeling very angry and horrible towards whoever it may be, you also feel affectionate and kind and generous and all that sort of thing. So what is the truth? The truth of the matter is that one goes through changing states all the time. Changing all the time. See, time and change in that separatist manner go together. And therefore, the solution of the problems raised by that process can never come from that level. Any healing in the true sense, any integrating, always emerges from a transcendent depth, because it is in the transcendent depth that the integrative creative activity goes on. These are deep things in connection with the consciousness process. We don't understand it well enough in the ordinary way. So now, let me come back to this matter of attentiveness. When attentiveness is total and complete, and one is aware, fully aware and awake in terms of wholeness, then one is living and functioning in eternity, not time. Therefore, the past, as we commonly call it, has lost its grip upon us. Consider how much sorrow and other things besides we go through when memories of the past come back to us. How much hate is roused up when we recall what, as we say, that the evil things done to us by somebody, undeservedly, as we always say. Probably considerably undeservedly, but it never is 100% undeservedly. There's always something on both sides. You see? This is what memory does. The memory of the past produces all kinds of reactions. Now, when attentiveness is total, the memory of the past is not suppressed. It is not wiped out. But what happens is this, or something like this. These memories of the past they are impressed upon the actual cells of the brain, and perhaps other parts of the body too, is there in the body. We hold our total history in our own living bodies. And whatsoever the conformation of the molecules and the cells which compose our brain and our bodies may be, they hold in their particular conformation this memory of the past. When you transcend the time element, when the mind and heart here now is utterly pure and strong, that conformation undergoes transformation. That conformation of the brain cells itself undergoes change. This is one of the points associated with the practice of the physical practice of the discipline of yoga. The bodily postures and the breathing contributes towards this transformation, provided one approaches the whole thing utterly purely, not in order to gain anything for self, because that is a force which spoils the real transformation as such. Extraordinary changes take place which affect not just the mind alone, but which actually affect the body too. So, when attentiveness is total, when you are actually functioning in eternity, all that psychic energy, which was an ill expression of one's own life process, that ill expression no longer can take place. See, this transformation at last takes place, so that this energy is liberated into the power for pure expression, for right expression. So that there is no question of undergoing a specialized technique in order to bring about purification. The process of purification is a natural process. I can't take any of the cells of my brain or body and wash them in some new detergent which is guaranteed to wash it whiter than white sort of business. Can't be done that way. It is this way, through the observation, through the understanding, and through the total attentiveness, this force for separating, for splitting up, is out of the situation. That same energy in me, myself, which splits up, no longer splits up. That's the energy now, is integrative only. It's utterly purified. So in total attentiveness, a process of purification is going on constantly. And you know how important this process of purification is. Because unless there is complete purity, there is no possibility of true communion. And the state of communion is the state of total attentiveness, and it marks the fact that one's mode of awareness has undergone this complete transformation from the worldly mode of awareness, which is self-centered, self-oriented, and all the rest of it, into the transcendent mode, where there is no fear, there is no sorrow there. There is no pleasure-pain duality there. That is expressed as the peace of God which passes understanding, as the bliss or ananda of Brahman. These phrases have been used, but what they actually mean in psychological fact and expressed in at least reasonably lucid intellectual terms is very difficult to get hold of. Well, what has happened? I, the ordinary man of the world, am at last truly a man. And remember that the word man means the creative thinker. The word human means the happy creator. And these meanings are identical with what man ascribes to God. Man is potentially that which is represented in the word God. That is what man is potentially. So I've tried this afternoon to take us into the depths of what is implied and what is involved in this matter of total attentiveness, of right mindfulness, and of the transformation of the worldly mode of awareness of existence into the transcendent mode, which is the purely and fully human mode.